Yes, I'm going to end your host of Schlock Jock. It's Schlock, going to end your host of Schlock Jock. It's Schlock, going to end your host of Schlock Jock. Josh.
Welcome to Schlock Culture. I'm your host, Joshua Halstead, and let's talk some movie news. Now, we got a whole bunch of stuff to talk about, but I'm going to try to jump through it as quickly as possible for you. So let's start with the second trailer for Disney's Onward. So they put out one trailer a while ago, and they kind of just kept playing the same trailer over and over and over again, right? So it's a Disney Pixar film. And they kind of kept playing the same trailer over and over again. And at first, you know, the first time I played, I was like, oh, it's fun. It looks okay. But then it kept playing. And as it kept playing, I went from it looks kind of fun to I really am not interested. The character designs are cool, but I'm tired of this trailer. Nothing in this trailer stood out to me the first time, let alone now. So, but then they put out a second trailer. And guys, the second trailer is really good. Really, really good. I will say that the animation style and the way that they are doing the humor is not typical Pixar fare. So normally Pixar is a lot more witty humor and humor within the wording of things, stuff like that. Some really good sort of understated sight gags. But with this, they are doing a lot of slapstick and Chris Pratt saying funny lines that are sort of over the top and nothing's understated. So it's not quite as Pixar-y as I would usually want. But I really liked the second trailer. I felt a lot more of the heart there, which is the thing that Pixar is really good at. And I can tell there's going to be a lot of heart in the film. So that portion of it I think is super cool. So I really like the second trailer. I think it's infinitely better than the first trailer, to the extent that I can't believe they released the first trailer as it was, and that could potentially harm the box office total for this movie, just because I think a lot of people were not huge fans of that first little teaser trailer. I'm not totally hating Chris Pratt's voice acting here. I like Chris Pratt, but I'm often concerned that he is, you know, a bit over the top. He's a bit loud. He's not the best actor. So I'm always concerned when they announce he's going to be in something that I haven't seen him do before about if he's going to do a good job or not. It looks like he's doing a good job in this, which is awesome. I really liked the trailer, the second trailer for Onward. So now I'm on board. So let us move on and talk about Ben Affleck's next film. So Ben Affleck is getting back behind the camera to make a film called King Leopold's Ghost, which is a true story concerned with colonialism, African history, human rights violations, and the inspiring lengths people can go to when they fight for what's right. That is via Collider. So, Ben Affleck is one of my favorite directors. Now, he's directed four films, right? He directed Gone Baby Gone. He directed Argo. He directed The Town. And then he directed Live by Night. And I'm going to be honest here. As much as I adore Ben Affleck, Live by Night was not a good film. Live by Night was a very beautifully shot and well-acted film with a very, very poor script. It was so drawn out. It had so many pacing issues that it ended up being branded as one of the most boring films critics had seen. And I saw the film, and even as somebody who's a huge Affleck fan who loves just watching Affleck on screen, even I was bored in it. So, this is Affleck's first time directing since Live by Night. And what I gotta say is, this is the exact kind of film I want Affleck to do, right? I mean, I want him to be able to do whatever he wants to do, right? I have no qualms in that. But if we're just solely talking about what do I want to see if I could pick for the next Ben Affleck film, well, the answer is a true story suspense drama, which is what he's seen the most success in, with, of course, the exception of The Town, which is not a true story but is fantastic. This feels much more in line to stuff like Argo, The Town, Gone Baby Gone, where he delivers Oscar-winning, fantastic films. So this is super exciting to me. I love Ben Affleck, and I'm really excited to see what happens in the movie. So we're going to have a whole lot of stuff to talk about, of people being misquoted, of false news stories this week. But before we get to my section all about misquoting, let's talk about Joker 2. So a news article came out via a usually pretty reliable source. Hollywood Rundown put out an article saying that Todd Phillips had signed on to do Joker 2, that they were in talks with Joaquin Phoenix to reprise his role, that it was all confirmed and a go. And then not very long after that, Todd Phillips sat down with IndieWire and he said this: "I can honestly say to you that there was no meeting that ever happened on October 7th where I marched in. First of all, if you know me and my career, that's not my style. I made a huge comedy at Warner Brothers, The Hangover, and I didn't suddenly become a Comedy Factory producer like, oh, let's just churn out movies. Bradley Cooper and I had a production company at Warner's. I've been at Warner's for 15, 16 years. You have two things in development at all times, not 40 things like some people. I'm not that kind of guy who goes out, who goes marching in saying, I want these 40 titles. I just want to have that energy. I don't have that energy. Here's the real truth about a sequel. While Joaquin Phoenix and I have talked about it, and while touring the world with Warner Bros. Executives, going to Toronto and Venice and other places, of course we're sitting at dinner, and they're saying, so, have you thought about? But, talking about contracts, there's not a contract for us to even write a sequel, and we've never approached Joaquin to be in a sequel. What will happen? Again, I just think the article was anticipatory at best." So, this is a case, and this happens a lot, but this week particularly, I think, is very emblematic of this. People want, you know, people that write news, movie news or regular news or anything else, they want sensational articles. They want clicks. So they misquote stuff, right? We're going to talk about this in a little bit. But here's the reality. Todd Phillips and Joaquin Phoenix are not on for a Joker 2. There have been discussions, but it's never been confirmed. They have not been approached to do it yet, right? There's just been mild conversations casually over cocktails while touring for the movie. So that is a far cry from Phillips has signed on and writing it, and they're, you know, working on getting a contract up for Joaquin. That's a far cry from that. Hollywood Reporter is usually a reliable source, so I don't want to go after Hollywood Reporter too much here. But I feel very often that so much of this industry is people misquoting and people lying and people trying to get clicks over telling the real truth and providing real news stories. And this just goes to show it. And this week has been emblematic of people misquoting, lying, all sorts of garbage. So that's the first thing. Now, let's move on to something happier. So, Yorgos Lanthimos, the Hungarian, I believe, director who is one of my favorite directors, who did Killing of a Sacred Deer, Dogtooth, The Lobster, and The Favorite, and a few other films as well. He's one of my favorite filmmakers. He does really cool surrealist stuff, like very sort of David Lynchian. So he has now signed on to do a miniseries about Clark Rockefeller, who is, if you don't know the story, he was not a member of the Rockefeller family. He was somebody who was a impressionist or impersonator, who impersonated being a member of the Rockefeller family, as well as a bunch of other stuff, right? He was a serial imposter. And Yorgos Lanthimos is doing a miniseries based on this guy, which I find to be super interesting. I don't want to dive into the story of Clark Rockefeller here, because I just don't think it's important to this story. I think it'd be a big time waster. But that on its own, I think, is really awesome and really cool, and I'm very excited for that. I love Yorgos Lanthimos, and I am definitely here for anything he does. Let's move on to something else that I think is really weird and exciting. So Fede Alvarez, if you don't know, is a fantastic horror director, not a great action director, but a great horror director, who did The Evil Dead 2013, and he did Don't Breathe, both of which were produced by Sam Raimi, and both of which are amongst my top-ranking favorite horror films, and I'm a horror junkie, so you know that means something. And he did the girl who kicks, or the girl in the spider's web, which isn't terrific. but he's a fantastic horror director. He has started a production company, and with this production company, the first film he'll be making, which he'll be directing, is a film that he pitched as The Shining set in the White House, which is pretty cool. So it's part of his contract with Legendary Pictures. Now, Legendary is very, very hit and miss, especially in my opinion. But what Legendary does well is allow directors to just run with their vision. So when Legendary pairs with very, very, very empowered, passionate, and talented directors, they often end up with some really cool, really interesting stuff. And in the case of Yorgos Lanthimos, nope, in the case of Fede Alvarez, I think Fede Alvarez is fantastic, and I think his vision is very clear in each of his films. Even if you didn't like his Girl in the Spider's Web, I think that's what it's called. If you didn't like his movie there, you can still see his vision and his passion. And the biggest problem there is that he got bogged down clearly by studio requests, whereas in this case, with Legendary and with his own production company being the company making it and him choosing the idea and everything, I think he'll have full control. And I think that'll mean likely that he'll put out another great, awesome, standout horror film like Evil Dead, like Don't Breathe. All right. So we are just about done here. I want to talk a little bit about misquoting. So this is going to be a shorter episode this week. I'm going to call this portion this week in I don't think they said that. So let's start with, did Emilia Clarke say on Armchair Expert Dax Shepard's podcast the HBO producers pressured her into the nude scenes because they were trying to tell her, well, you're going to disappoint the fans, and you're pressuring into these scenes and they're bad, and this is the other portion of the Me Too problem? Nope. No, she didn't. So, I'm going to read you the quote that was being published and going around. And then, as somebody who is a huge fan of Dax Shepard's podcast, Armchair Expert, I'm going to tell you the context for this. Because I've listened to the episode twice now. I listened to it, as I always do, when it came out on the Monday it came out. And then I listened to it again in preparation for this. So, I'm going to tell you what the context was and what the demeanor was. So, first of all, they talk about other projects. So first of all, it says, so this is all over the place. This is on multiple places. I'm going to read you the one from IndieWire, but this was all over the place. Tons of people posted this. Pop Sugar posted this. In fact, Dax Shepard called out Pop Sugar for posting this, and Pop Sugar has since deleted it. So, which, congratulations, Pop Sugar, you did the right thing. Let me read you from IndieWire what it says. Theirs is a little better. Pop Sugar's original one said that she was literally just like, it wasn't even a full, like, it was literally just, they tweeted out, Emilia Clarke says she was pressured into nude and rape scenes, basically, and then their article didn't really even fully quote. It was completely incorrect. At least IndieWire gets the quote correct, mostly, despite totally either lying or misrepresenting the context. So Dax Shepard asked, which they leave out of here, right? So they keep saying, well, Clarke said she felt blah, 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 blah. No. So Dax Shepard asked her, did you feel pressured to appear nude on Game of Thrones? She talks about that. We'll read the quote in a second. He also asked her, did other projects since then, have they just assumed you'll go nude because of Game of Thrones? And she said that there have been a couple instances where she's read a script they've assumed that she'd want to do because of that. And she said, I'm not going to do that script because of this or whatever else. It's a really brief passage. She says it's not really been a problem, right? It's very clear there's not really been a problem for her. But the part that's going viral is her talking about being pressured to do nudity on Game of Thrones. Here's the actual, here's the quote that the IndieWire put out there. By the way, not just IndieWire, CNN, MSNBC, Fox News, IndieWire, Pop Sugar, like you name it, they posted it. It was really bad. It was all over the place, and it's basically a misquote, right? They're intentionally taking it out of context, or whoever, you know, was the first to publish it. By the way, some major companies like Cinema Blend didn't even name check Dax Shepard, right? Like they didn't even mention that this interview is listenable via Dax Shepard's podcast, Armchair Expert. By the way, if you haven't listened to Armchair Expert, please do. At the very least, please go listen to this episode so you understand the context here before you lose your mind over these Me Too allegations that she didn't make. So here's what she said. So IndieWire says, IndieWire quoting Amelia Clark says, "I'm a lot more savvy now." I'm not going to do a British accent. "I'm a lot more savvy now with what I'm comfortable with and what I am okay with doing. I've had fights on set before where I'm like, no, the sheet stays up. And they're like, you don't want to disappoint Game of Thrones fans. And I'm like, F you." She, and then it immediately from there says, Clark said there was a F ton of nudity in the first season of Game of Thrones. And part of the reason she went through it was because she was a brand new actress, with no prior experience on film or TV sets. As Clark explained, "I'd come fresh from drama school and I'd approached it as a job. If it's in the script, then clearly it's needed. This is what it is and I'm going to make sense of it. Everything's going to be cool." So, now they quote her some more. And they talk about, you know... So they quote her some more, and then, you know, they quote, "I'm floating through the first season and I have no idea what I'm doing. I have no idea what any of this is. Never been on a film set like this before. I'd been on a film set twice before then, and now I'm on a film set completely naked with all these people, and I don't know what I'm meant to do, and I don't know what's expected of me, and I don't know what you want, and I don't know what I want." Okay. Bull schnikes. Okay. All of this is out of order and out of context. So, Amelia Clark, did she say the quote where she says that she felt pressured, where she says, or up here what says that she felt pressured, right? Where she says, you know, she's had fights on set, know that she stays up, and they're like, you don't want to disappoint the Game of Thrones fans, and I'm like, F you. Okay, that is a direct quote from Armchair Expert. Here's the issue with how they're representing it. What she said was, and it was actually part of a story about Jason Momoa taking her under his wing, what she said, the full context of this whole thing, was that she had sort of imposter syndrome, right? It's amazing that she gets to be on this massive set, part of this massive thing, this thing that she knows is an adaptation of a beloved book series that she knows is a huge deal. She's never done anything like this. And it's amazing to be there. So she doesn't care that there's nudity in these, right? She's kind of uncomfortable. She doesn't say or do anything to let anybody know because she has imposter syndrome at this point, right? She feels like she's undeserving of this and she needs to be happy and go along with it. That has nothing to do with Benioff, Weiss, or any of the producers or showrunners or directors or the cast or anything else. That has to do with Amelia Clark herself. Now, she, by the way, points that out in the Armchair Expert interview. But additional to that, as far as the, you know, I disappoint Game of Thrones fans and I'm like, F you and that whole thing, right? She doesn't say that with an attitude. She doesn't say that as though it was a bad thing, right? She talks about how much she loved the experience of being there. She says this in a joking voice. What she is saying is that there were scenes after Jason Momoa, right? So she says that she would, and this is true, and I'm not going to lie about it. She says that she would go cry where no one could see her right before or right after doing these scenes because she was uncomfortable with them. This is season one still, where she has imposter syndrome. She's not telling anybody she's uncomfortable. Jason Momoa happened to see her emotional about doing the scene. He asked her about it. She told him that she was uncomfortable with doing some of the scenes, right? She was uncomfortable with some of the content. She wasn't prepared for it, but she was going to do it because it's in the script and she's going to go along with it. And she was uncomfortable with how it was being handled on set, right? Again, none of that means, and she doesn't say any of that is that they were doing anything wrong. She says that she was uncomfortable specifically with certain content and how it was done, right? Because she was not, as an actress, ready for that. Here's the thing. Momoa tells her, "No, sweetie, this is not okay. You need to let them know you're uncomfortable with this," which is why Daenerys has way fewer nude scenes, right? I want to make that clear. Amelia Clark, when she told them, "I don't want to do as many nude scenes," got her way. They just cut down her nude scenes. She doesn't say there were fights, there were arguments, nothing. She asked them, her nude scenes got cut. Momoa gave her the courage to do that. She then says that there were scenes throughout where the scene was written one way and where on set she would say, "I'm not doing that." And they would say, "Well, it's supposed to be done like this. And the Game of Thrones fans kind of want that." And I would say, "No, F you, I'm doing this my way." None of that right? And Dax talks about this, and she talks about this, right? There's a whole conversation. The conversation isn't Game of Thrones producers were bad. It's not that it's a Me Too issue. It's none of that, right? And by the way, there are female directors for Game of Thrones. She doesn't specify. Some of Daenerys' nude scenes are in episodes directed by women. So you can't just label it with a broad stroke based on these small and nondescript quotes. You have to listen to the interview and get the context. Because no, she's not saying she was pressured into it by Game of Thrones directors and their bad and it's a Me Too problem. What she's saying is she pressured herself into scenes she wasn't comfortable with, and that Jason Momoa, being the stand-up guy that he is, gave her the courage to go against that. That is what she is saying, right? So that's an important context there. And yes, that quote sounds bad if you take it out of context. But if you put it in the context where she's talking about imposter syndrome and talking about how she forced herself to do stuff and how she had fights about that stuff because she was uncomfortable with those things and she had fights on set, she's not saying she was having yelling screaming matches. There's a context there, right? She's talking about having small arguments over how the scene is directed. That's a normal thing, whether it's nude scenes or not. That's a normal thing in Hollywood. You cannot layer these. You can't deal with these with broad strokes, and you have to understand how the industry works. Those weren't fights because they wanted her breasts out. Those weren't fights about that stuff. There were fights about how the scene was going to be directed, filmed, and acted. If how much skin you're showing, or the nudity, or how much of the sex scene is shown, how the sex scene is done, if all of that is in the script as part of how it's being directed, then yes, you have to have the argument with the director. There might be some directors who just go, oh yeah, totally, no problem. But whether it's male or female, if they have a vision for the whole episode, including those scenes, or they're revealing important character arcs and moments through those scenes, which by the way, Daenerys' nude scenes are all for plot reasons. There are other nude scenes in Game of Thrones that should not be there, that there's no reason to have there, and that I personally dislike. But Emilia Clarke's scenes aren't that. They're a part of the story. They're a part of the story. Each and every one of her nude scenes is integral to the story. The only possible exception is the first one in season one, where she's getting out of the tub and she's talking to her brother. Even there, you can argue, and I would argue, that that scene exists to show that her brother is sexually abusing her, something that Emilia Clarke says is true in Dax Shepard's podcast. So, that is the point here. Did she say these sentences? Yes. Did she say them in the way that's being represented by these articles? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. But people like Pop Sugar, which by the way, again, Pop Sugar deleted the article, right? Dax Shepard called them out. They deleted the article. They apologized and they tagged Dax so Dax could retweet that yes, you know, they had solved it, right? Good for Pop Sugar. What about IndieWire? What about CNN? What about MSNBC? None of them have taken this down. Tons of online media news have misreported this story. Tons of them. And none of them have corrected it except for Pop Sugar. So that's the first thing in the they didn't say that, you lying sack of crap portion of the podcast. Let's move on to the second they didn't say that, you lying sack of crap a portion of the podcast. Did Elizabeth Banks say men are evil and awful because they didn't go see Charlie's Angels and that it's part of a secret meeting to tear down the patriarchy? No, obviously not. Did she say that if Charlie's Angels bombed, which it did, it's men's fault? Nope. No, she didn't. Here is what Elizabeth Banks said in an interview specifically asked about if the film flopped. This is what she said. Look, people have to buy tickets to this movie too. This movie has to make money. If this movie doesn't make money, it reinforces a stereotype in Hollywood that men don't go see women do action movies, right? She continues, they'll go and see a comic book movie with Wonder Woman and Captain Marvel because that's a male genre. So even though those are movies about women, they put them in the context of feeding a larger comic book world. So it's all about, yes, you're watching a Wonder Woman movie, but we're setting up three other characters and we're setting up Justice League. By the way, I'm happy for those characters to have box office success, but we need more women's voices supported with money because that's the power. The power is in the money. Okay, so what Elizabeth Banks is saying here, shocker, is true. Men go see women in superhero films, usually, because not men go see, those make money even with men who would not typically see a female-led action movie because they're setting up Batfleck and Henry Cavill's Superman and Justice League and all of those. They're connected to a universe. People then got mad at her. Feminists got mad at her, even though she's a feminist, because they were saying, well, you said male genre. Are you saying comic book movies are a male genre? Oh, my word. She is a feminist. She should have said that it's seen as a male genre, because statistically it's not technically a male genre, but it's seen as a male genre. That's clearly what she was trying to say. Look for context. Understand the intent of what people are saying. Stop getting so mad when people misword things. You're all idiots. Listen, she's correct. Charles Angels, by the way, did flop, and I don't give a rat's crap if you see it or you don't see it. I don't care. I'm going to go see it. I love Elizabeth Banks. I like Charlie's Angels. I want to go see it. But listen, it's not about if you have to go see the film or not. You can pick what movies you see. But she is correct that when the film bombed, it reinforced to studios the message that people aren't going to go see female-driven action movies, especially if they're not a part of a universe that is largely male-driven, and especially if you have a female behind the camera. That is what it reinforces. Whether or not that's true, whether or not that's an actual thing that's happening, or people just specifically didn't want to see Charlie's Angels, isn't the point. The point is that studios aren't willing to take risks, so now there's a high likelihood that female-driven action movies written and or directed by women will bomb or will not be made. That is a reality. She is correct. It has nothing to do with patriarchy. It has nothing to do with leftism. It has nothing to do with politics, anything. She's talking about the way that the studio system reacts to films failing. She's correct. Stop misquoting people. Oh my gosh. The last thing. I'm not even going to dive into the specifics. I'm just going to hint on it. Please go look it up for yourself. Kristen Bell. Did Kristen Bell say that she did not like Dax Shepard at first, or that she fell in love with Dax before he fell in love with her? Spoiler alert, both. She said both things, because they're from two different parts of the story. And yet, guess what? Different media outlets reporting different quotes. Here's why, because you get more clicks by saying that she didn't love Dax Shepard first. Right, that she wasn't into Dax Shepard at first. That you get with she fell in love with Dax before Dax fell in love with her. So you get a bunch of huge media outlets reporting that it wasn't all butterflies and rainbows, was her quote, when she first met Dax Shepard. Yeah, because that's not how love works. Both things are true. It's not a clickbaity story. If you want to hear the full story, here's what you should do to not support those magazines. If you want to hear the full story of them falling in love, go to Dax Shepard's podcast, Armchair Expert, scroll down, listen to the first episode, her and Dax, they tell the story. And that's what you ought to do. I know, I've promoted Armchair Expert like 4 times in this podcast. I'm not paid to promote it. The stories happen to align with Armchair Expert this week. Thank you guys for listening. I will be back on Monday with an in-depth review of Frozen Part 2 and with box office charting. Until then, have a great weekend and go schlock yourselves.